Welcome to the Cop Doc Podcast. This podcast explores police leadership issues and innovative ideas. The Cop Doc shares thoughts and ideas as he talks with leaders in policing, communities, academia, and other government agencies. And now, please join Dr. Steve Morreale and industry thought leaders as they share their insights and experience on the Cop Doc Podcast.
Okay, so we're back with Vicky Harrington, the Director of Knowledge at the Australian Institute of Police Management. And another question that came to mind was, what are the three things, Vicky, that you feel police need to focus on, need to work on?
That's really interesting that you asked that, Steve, because it actually ties nicely with a paper I just wrote for the Police Chief magazine out of the IACP. And we were talking about, you know, in the face of complexity, what the hell do we do as police organisations? And we sort of posited that there were three things that police organisations needed to invest in for the future. And the first one of that was being able to think as a systems actor. So being a systempreneur, if you like, rather than necessarily being a victim of the system as things turn up on your doorstep. The second thing that we thought was really important for police to invest in was social capital. And by that, I mean social capital with other organisations. And in Australia, certainly, and I'm absolutely certain in other parts of the world, a lot of interagency confusion is masked by the bonds that we have with other people in similar roles to us in other agencies. So as we think about complex problems and we think about the need to engage with different sorts of agencies, then we need to think about how we're going to build those social capital and those social bonds with those folk. And one way you do it, of course, is through leadership programs, because you go somewhere where you're in a safe and trusting environment and you're talking about your vulnerabilities as a leader, well, then you build pretty good social capital with folk. And the third thing we thought that was really important for folk to engage in, or folk at policing to invest in, was diversity of thought. So we spend a lot of time in organisations talking about diversity, and it's great that we do, and that's an important part of the puzzle. But if we still all end up thinking the same way, then we're not really getting the benefit of all of that diversity. So how do we engage in better diversity of thought? And of course, part of that is creating environments in which people feel psychologically safe to voice a different perspective. So, and I think without diversity of thought, then we're not really giving ourselves a fighting chance as we're facing increasing complexity in the years ahead.
So it seems to me that part of what you're talking about, and I think that's pretty quite interesting that you'll be writing for an audience of American, well, it's international, but generally an American population, American Canadian population of police chiefs who read this. But I'm made to think that why we don't do a better job of bringing disparate points of view together in a training or in a facilitated workshop where you're bringing not only police, but you're bringing healthcare and you're bringing community leaders and you're bringing business leaders to try to figure out, identify what a problem is and chip away at perspective, at points of view, and then working towards a solution. You know, where could we do that? Where would you do that in Australia? Where might we do that in America? Where you're not just with like-minded people, you're only with police chiefs, you're only with fire chiefs.
It's a really, really good point. So in Australia at the AIPM, so we have that multi-agency perspective, and I spoke before about sometimes the tax office will be there, or Border Force will be there and policing will be there. And we know that each organisation has its own different kind of vibe and culture. So there is a degree of diversity there, but we're still all coppers. We're still all kind of thinking about things from a very policing perspective. You're absolutely right. There is a need to broaden that, particularly when we're talking about complex social problems. So you could do that potentially in something like a leadership program where you're not talking about an issue. Or, you can do it also. We need to create spaces for better debate on and focusing on a particular issue. And some other bits of work that I'm engaged in across the world that are looking to create spaces for debate. So we're looking to bring disparate perspectives together. Even in the academic world, we don't bring disparate perspectives together. You go to the CRIM conference or you go to the psych conference or, you know, we don't do that well. And we're not incentivized to do that well in the university world either, right? Because interdisciplinarity is not
just about to say that.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
I mean, we're starting to push in that direction. But but what you're saying is there's something going on in university that says we need to talk with one another and stop with the silos and understand that psychology can help criminal justice, can help communications, can help sociology, can help urban studies. So let's get people together to talk. Yeah. And I think we're talking about the same idea of bringing different people to work on world issues with different perspectives. And I think it can come up with a much stronger and robust solution.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's some of the stuff we're trying to do in a Global Voices research network that we're setting up at the moment. So that's a really exciting project to try and bring those disparate voices together across the world to create some, you know, action grounded on authentic humanistic dialogue is sort of the angle that we're taking. And it's if we can do it, if we can't even do it in the academic world, then it's really tricky to try and encourage other folk to do it, right? So we have to be able to do that in universities as much as we're doing that, trying to do that in the professions and the social fabric of organizations that are engaged in,
you know, Vicky,
tackling problems.
Having been a second career academic, one of the things that I recognize when I'm in faculty meetings and I'm talking to meetings with university-wide folks is, you know, the feeling that very often when you're teaching, and this may happen even sometimes at the AIPM, that we operate as almost, we all have our specialties and we operate quite often in silos and as independent contractors. And so it's the conversations that you can have and the modeling that you can start by having at your faculty meetings or at your staff meetings to talk about, so what are you doing? What's going on? What's working? What are your difficulties? And to have somebody open that conversation very often opens the eyes of somebody who's been working in an office right down the road or right down the hall and doesn't know what you're doing because you're all immersed. So, I mean, I'm watching your reaction to that, but can you see value in just opening that conversation? Or is that something you do routinely?
I mean, I think we're rewarded for being experts, aren't we? Particularly at our level, we're rewarded for being experts. So it's very difficult to park your expertise sometimes, but being able to be honest and humble about your expertise is a really important part of being able to start those sorts of conversations. I think the other thing, we shouldn't, you know, be in any doubt that we need to incentivize this stuff as well, right? What do we do that incentivizes interdisciplinarity in academia? Very little. You're rewarded for how many papers you pump out, not how many different departments you engage with in order to pump those papers out. So we can think more cleverly about how we can incentivize the sorts of behaviors that we want to see. And then that will incentivize the sorts of debates that we can actually have because we are putting interdisciplinary ideas on the table. So I think it's about individuals wanting to change the conversation. That's absolutely important and valuable and an important leadership activity. But it's also about trying to think through what the incentives are and how we might reduce the incentives for individual expertise and increase the incentives for collective wisdom.
Broader thinking, which is amazing. And one of the things that I wrote down while you were talking about is that we have to recognize our limitations. When we write a paper, we have to say what's the limitations, but we're very, very reticent to say, well, I've got some limitations. You might see me as an expert, but I have my limitations. I think that's important. While I have you for this second session, let me ask another question. What do you read or listen to broaden your perspective as opposed to just reading? What do you read for fun? I guess that's the question.
Well, having just finished an MBA, I haven't had much time to read for fun, I have to be honest. But it's a good point because actually the reading I did through my MBA was very much in a completely different field. Like I'm a social scientist, dyed in the wool. I came up through the criminology pathway, really. And so when I read I read things about business, actually it sparks different thoughts. I try and read broadly. I'm looking at the pile of reading I've got on my desk at the moment here. Three books stand out to me. John Kay's and Mervyn King's Radical Uncertainty, How You Deal With Kind of Risk in an Uncertain World. I think that's really important. And then something called The New Long Life, which is Andrew Scott and Linda Grattan. So Linda Grattan, she's an org psych out of the London Business School. And she wrote a book which changed my life a few years ago called The 100-Year Life. And it talks about the different components of living a good life around investing in finances, investing in health, investing in knowledge, investing in networks in particular, and how we pay into and draw down on those particular components of our life throughout our lifespan, and being able to be a bit strategic about how we do that. Anyway, having read that book, I then went and did the MBA to invest in my knowledge and into my networks, and very much draw down on my finances, I might add.
Yeah. It wasn't free, huh?
It was not free. Yes. I got a scholarship, but it was not free.
Yes.
I've just finished reading the sequel, The New Long Life, and that's it. It's a great book to read. And then right at the bottom of this pile, which I think should be a rule for life, is the no asshole rule. I just think, you know, I think it's a really valuable book for everyone to read. Sometimes leadership's really hard. Sometimes it's really simple.
I love the title. I bought it based on the title. I can tell you, how can you not buy a book called The No Asshole Rule? But you said asshole, but we say asshole, so
yeah.
I've got to be careful. But listen, I want to finish with one question. Are you a glutton for punishment to go back for an MBA? And the reason I ask that is not, I think it's admirable that you did that. But when you began to look at it from the business aspect, there had to be, I can't believe that you weren't thinking every step of the way, how can I interpret this and apply it and adapt it to my world and to the world of policing and public safety? Was that not sort of underneath everything you were reading?
I think so. And it was absolutely exhausting because of that, because not only you digesting it as a student of business, you're trying to shift it in your brain and apply it to the world of the public service as well. So, no, I think it was incredibly valuable, though. And even though all the way throughout there were moments of, what the hell am I doing this for? This makes no sense. I have no interest in business finance. I've got no interest in accounting. But still, these are really important things. And ironically, those ended up being my two best marks.
Well, but Vicky, they're applicable. Because while business finance is one thing, finance on the other side, the public finance, is pretty important. And sometimes we don't understand that well. And we could take some lessons from business finance and other topics, as you said. So anyway, you're done.
I am done. I did well as well. I'm really, really quite happy about that.
That's great. Well, I want to finish up, and I want to thank you again for this second session. Getting to talk with you has been very, very enlightening, I have to say, and I appreciate the opportunity and the feedback that you've provided, and I hope other people glean some good information from what you had to say. So we've been talking with Dr. Vicky Harrington from the Australian Institute of Police Management. You've been listening to the Cop Doc podcast. I'm Steve Morielli from Boston, and we've been talking to Vicky in the UK. Vicky, thank you again so much.
My absolute pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Cop Doc podcast with Dr. Steve Morielli. Steve is a retired law enforcement practitioner and manager turned academic and scholar from Worcester State University. Please tune into the Cop Doc podcast for regular episodes of interviews with thought leaders in policing.